Since this is a podcast, you can only hear me right now. But if you could see me, you'd be saying, whoa, who is that? It's me, Katie Helper. I'm just wearing the new fashion line from American Giant. Since 2011, they've been making high-quality, long-lasting, timeless American clothes, including their classic full zip, which was named the greatest hoodie ever made by Slate Magazine. Right now, I'm wearing the very stylish moto dress, perfect for feeling sporty and sleek, made with their soft and stretchy French terry fabric, and Aaron got the roughneck chore jacket, so he's looking good throughout his endlessly busy schedule. From activewear to work fits to the latest fashion picks, American Giant has it all. When most apparel companies have shipped too much overseas, making cheap disposable clothes and creating complicated global supply chains, American Giant stands for simple, local, high-quality goods. It's the kind of difference you'll feel and appreciate for years to come. When you buy American Giant, you create local jobs in towns that help stitch communities together. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use the code USEFUL at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code USEFUL. As you know far too well from listening to Useful Idiots, the 2024 election is coming fast. And while we can't predict for sure which candidate will win, we do know that either way, everyone else in the world will lose. Unless there was a fun and easy way to make a little extra cash on the whole terrible contest. That's right, betting's not just for sports fans anymore. Now it's the political junkies' time to shine. We figured that if we spend all our time on Twitter anyway, following the election and endless political analysis, why not put our knowledge to the test? It's MyBookie, a new sports book that lets you bet on the 2024 election from the general election down to who will win each state. If the world is crashing anyway, why not cash in? Don't miss out on this. Pick a side. Use promo code USEFUL to double your first deposit and instantly start with a leg up, only with MyBookie. Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm one of your hosts, Katie Helper.
And I'm Matt Taibbi.
He's Matt Taibbi, yeah.
Would we want to do the food groups? Because we've been kind of like remiss with the food groups. So the Vanguard thing kind of interrupted our whole food groups, mo-shows. So we're gonna go back to...
Mo-shows? You know, what did you say? Food groups mo-shows?
Food groups mojo.
Oh, mojo, yeah. I thought you said mo-shows,
food groups mojo.
Yeah.
Food groups mojo.
Yeah, so we're back in business. We got four food groups. We should make it eight, but we're not going to do that. That would be too much. So people know this idea has come from one of your dad's journalist friends, correct?
Yeah, it was a producer that he worked with a long time ago, a TV producer. Yeah, basically the idea is that all TV news broadcasts are come down to four things. Democrats suck, Republicans suck. Isn't that weird? And isn't that terrible? Pretty much every newscast has those elements. And that's pretty much it. It's horrible political stories and things that just make you go, hmm.
Right.
Which is the idea.
Ew.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly.
We should have him on. Is he still alive or has he joined V.S. Naipaul?
Haven't been in Mark touch Twain. For a while, but he's quite a funny guy. He was in charge of doing what they call crashes, which is like when you have a big story that kind of takes over the whole network and they have to coordinate all the different, you know, sort of live shots and everything.
Right.
And he called that work shoveling coal for Satan.
Oh, wow. He should have been a writer.
Yeah, he is. He is right. He's a funny guy.
All right, let's do this. Let's go back to the four basic food groups. And that means Democrats suck, Republicans suck. Isn't that weird and isn't that terrible? So I got Dems. If we could just go to the videotape. Obviously, as people probably know, Derek Chauvin was found guilty of murdering George Floyd. Former Minneapolis police officer was found guilty of second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. The death of Mr. Floyd spurred the largest civil rights protest in decades. That was me reading at the New York Times. And of course, since then, there have been other police shootings and killings. Look at this videotape of Nancy Pelosi's response.
So again, thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice, for being there to call out to your mom. How heartbreaking was that? Call out for your mom. I can't breathe, but because of you, and because of thousands, millions of people around the world who came out for justice, your name will always be synonymous.
Can we watch the very beginning? So there's Nancy Pelosi basically thanking George Floyd for his sacrifice, which is problematic for a number of reasons. But can we just...
There's like nine things wrong with this.
Yeah, let's go through them in a second. But can we just play the very beginning of it? Notice her body language. Sorry. Okay, watch.
Thank you, George Floyd. For sacrificing
so she's looking up,
your life
right?
For
oh, God. Ugh.
Okay, so she's slightly looking up. Now, the reason I want to highlight that is because if we can go to this other clip, Donald Trump, who had his own reaction, a little bit less linear.
Hopefully,
so
George
this is Donald
looking
Trump.
Down right now and saying, there's a great thing that's happening for our country. There's a great day for him. It's a great day for everybody.
Sorry, it's not funny. But...
it is a great, no. great day.
I forgot how
and
nuts he is.
And this was because of, I know, this was because the job numbers were good, right?
That's so funny.
I know.
Yes, I know, yeah.
That's what it was, right?
Yeah.
So I like that both of them, so who said it better?
His is more ridiculous, but hers is way more pretentious.
Hers is more pretentious, and in a weird way, it's more of a thing, because like she's a fairly rational person.
Yeah, she had to actually think about
that. She thought about that and thought it was okay to say that. And also, like, she looked up a little bit. To be fair, Donald Trump didn't do that. Now, he could have, because he was talking about George Floyd looking down. But
and I love how he called him George.
Oh, I know.
Hopefully,
I know.
George, and you know my friend George, you know, who I met in heaven the other day. Yeah.
You know what's funny is that, like, he, I think there's a longer clip, but he says, like, it was so terrible what happened. He, like, go kind of like what Pelosi does, where she's like, who called out to his mother. Isn't that terrible? It's like they're like, it is really heartbreaking that, like, his last words were mama. It was weird the way she was saying it. It was kind of like she had just heard about it. Or,
right, which is like Trump, who's like, wow, that was bad.
Why is it so wrong, the sacrifice? Like, it's tone deaf, and it's like, it's almost like the don't ever let a, what is it? Don't let a good crisis
go to waste.
Go to waste, yeah. Well, it implies a sort of volition on his part.
Yeah, that he did it voluntarily, that, you know, that it was, ended up being a net positive or something like that. It's... you know, she's placing it in the context of like, what did you do for me kind of a thing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the thing that struck me as odd about that is this, it was almost a religious kind of invocation. Like he gave his, a Christ-like kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Given that there have been some pretty weird religious overtones with a lot of this stuff,
right.
The washing of the feet, the kente cloth scarves that she was also involved with. It just,
wait, what's the washing of the feet?
Oh, that happened during the protests last year. There were ceremonies where people were having, white people were lining up to have their feet washed by black ministers.
Oh, I didn't know that. But Pelosi didn't do that we know of, right?
No, but she didn't do that.
Tenor,
no, but it was a thing.
Yeah.
But it was the religiosity of the subject. I mean, you know, obviously I wrote a couple of books about this, and there's like a long list of things that go into why these cases happen. And probably number one on the list is that the police never get convicted, which is what makes this situation remarkable, right? But like the other 15 things have been kind of like thrown to the side and turned into this performative, in some cases by people like Pelosi. You know, it's almost like a religious movement, which I don't think helps. I don't know.
And then there's also, of course, Biden saying that, like, his takeaway from this was that there's a difference between shooting someone in the heart and shooting them in the leg. Remember that? Which doesn't actually work. I mean, because there's the femoral artery.
Well, there's that. And also, police are not trained to do that.
Yeah.
Like, they're trained. You're not supposed to use your gun unless you're going to use it for lethal force. Like, you have to assume that every time you use your gun, you're going to kill the person.
Right.
Which is supposed to be a disincentive to using it. There's a lot of things that are crazy about it. But the Pelosi, she's like an anti-barometer. Like, she finds the one note that you can't possibly hit.
Oh, well, I will say she does make a big deal out of her Catholicism, which I don't really want to hear about people's religion. I remember she was once like, I don't have hate. I have no hate in my heart for Trump. I'm a Catholic.
I was a Catholic. I guess you're supposed to love your enemies, right?
Yeah.
All right. So what do we have for Republicans suck? Oh, yes. So the Democrats reacted in their own inappropriate way. But the Republicans, the New York Times did a story. It's not any one thing. After the Chauvin verdict, the Times ran this story. It says how the GOP is creating harsher penalties for protesters. Republican legislators in Oklahoma and Iowa have passed bills granting immunity to drivers whose vehicles strike and injure protesters in public streets. A Republican proposal in Indiana would bar anyone convicted of unlawful assembly from holding state employment, including elected office. A Minnesota bill would prohibit those convicted of unlawful protesting from receiving student loans, unemployment benefits, or housing assistance. And this, to me, it's like encompasses everything or encapsulates everything that's just stupid about Republicans.
So we got, what do we have? We got bills granting immunity to drivers whose vehicles strike and injure protesters in public streets. That's insane. I'm just revisiting it because it's kind of shocking. Barring anyone convicted of unlawful assembly from holding state employment, including elected office. Then that was Indiana. Then Minnesota prohibit those convicted of unlawful protesting from receiving student loans, unemployment benefits, or housing assistance. And then in Florida, sweeping legislation, toughening existing laws governing public disorder, and created a harsh new level of infractions. A bill he's called the strongest anti-looting, anti-rioting, pro-law enforcement piece of legislation in the country. All right. I had to just redo that because they're so shocking. I mean, they're not shocking. Yeah. You're right. They're not shocking, right?
They're but not.
They are remarkable.
They're not. They're stupid. So in the last 4 years, 5 years, if you go to... if you watch any Republican or conservative political gathering, they are all about civil liberties, cancel culture, free speech, going back to the Constitution. Basically, the only issue that they have left that works for them at all is this idea of sort of creeping illiberalism in on the Democratic side. And so what do? Like, rather than actually lean into that issue and take it to a place that would probably be effective across the public, they turn around and do their own versions that are worse of crackdowns against civil liberties, right? So you're upset about people protesting in the streets. You're upset about all these other things. And so you're going to crack down on the right to assembly. Like now you've basically taken that issue away as a political winner for you. It's a complete contradiction.
I feel like that's always been their lane. Like that's the constant.
It's not the lane of like the sort of Ron or Rand Paul version of Republican.
Right, right.
Look, the 80s version of the Republicans that we all grew to love and hate, which was
just hate.
You know, let's put people in prison for flag burning and stuff like that. Like they would simultaneously talk about constitutional protections and then go after whatever it was, use the law as a cudgel to go after what pornography, flag burning, whatever it is. And so this is just, it's just a repeat of the same stupidity that we've always seen from them, which is that they recognize something in the population that bothers people. And then they go and they double down and they give them a non-solution to it. That's all it is just cruel and repressive and stupid.
I guess to me, it's just on brand, and Rand Paul is kind of the exception. Like Rand Paul is a libertarian. I guess this is just classic Republican, like classic Republican crackdown, which I think the majority of Republicans are behind. It's troubling on the left in a way that I think is more kind of insidious, because, you know, the left is supposed to not, I mean, who am I kidding? Like the left is supposed to be a lot of things. It's not, you know, it's totally hawkish. Obviously the Democrats are a hawkish party. I also think that there are just certain things that they embrace, like publicly, like they embrace the tech stuff, right? The oversight, the content moderation.
Well, that's what
stuff.
I mean. The tech thing is a huge issue for Republicans now, right? Because they're really, you know, especially on the press front, they've got all their supporters are in a tizzy about tech censorship, you know, the possibility of cooperation with the state and censorship and all these things. And then they turn around and they do crackdowns on speech, and now you've taken that away. Right.
Yeah. So, I just think it was never even, they never had it. Like they're so selective.
Well, they've had it in areas. Obviously they've always been 100% in favor of, you know, economic freedoms, even when, you know, to the point of being completely deregulated.
Right.
But I just think with this landscape, what they're doing is they're responding to headlines and just coming up with things that they think that a certain segment of their base is going to love. Yeah. It's just the same stupidity that
I think, you know, most of them do love, right? Isn't Law and Order stuff like popular? Tough on crime stuff?
Yeah, the Tough on Crime's always been popular with them. But yeah, again, this is a party that is struggling to find an issue
right.
that it can win on, because it's no longer going to get, it's no longer even getting the bulk of the corporate money. It's not going to win on the economic liberty argument. It's not winning the donations battle right, yeah. anymore. So it needs an issue. What do we have for Isn't That Weird?
So I mostly chose this one, if I'm being honest, for the headline, reading at Live Science. Your most distant cousin doesn't even have an anus.
That's a great headline.
It's a great headline, right?
That's probably the least anticipatable headline. Like, if you were going to predict all the weird headlines that would eventually exist,
when
that would be
yeah.
a pretty hard one to predict.
Yeah.
It's you know how that all right? the whole thing with like six monkeys typing, eventually they'll write Hamlet.
Well, which would be first, Hamlet or your most
probably,
distant cousin?
Probably this, but Hamlet, you know, yeah. it's in that area.
Okay, so again, your most distant cousin doesn't even have an anus. It sounds like a diss, doesn't it? Like kind of like a yo mama joke, but about cousins, about distant cousins.
Your mama doesn't have an anus.
Yeah, your most distant cousin doesn't even have an anus. Your mama doesn't even have an anus. The nerve of those comb jelly predators. This is interesting, actually. Very interesting. There's an interesting photo. It kind of looks like a hedgehog in profile combined with a lettuce.
Right.
Or cabbage. Hedge lettuce. Purple cabbage. Yeah. A sponge the size of a minivan, the largest on record, was found in 2015 during a deep sea expedition in Papanaumokuakea Marine National Monument off Hawaii. Oh, another Hawaii story, by the way. These bizarre creatures are humanity's most distant animal cousins, according to new research. And this is from this week, by the way. So it's a new story, even though the discovery, I guess, was made in 2015. The entire history of the animal kingdom is like a long highway, with different species exiting at different points to pursue their own evolutionary paths. And sea sponges got off at the highway's first exit, ending up in the most distant corner of the country. Scientists recently compared the genetics of sponges with that of another unusual animal, comb jellies. They say their research, published March 19th in the journal Nature Communications, resolves the debate, which, Matt, we've been having ourselves. Some biologists already considered sponges the most distant cousins of all other animals. Others argued that comb jellies were the true sister to all other animals. The concept of evolution existed for about a century before anyone discovered DNA. Many of the ideas developed during that era still hold. Animals that share many traits likely diverge from common ancestors more recently, taking the same evolutionary route until that point. And two animals that share fewer traits likely diverge longer ago.
So we're the anus having
yeah,
trait.
Yeah.
And then there's the non-anus having
yeah.
trait.
Yes, which is why we're, I guess, closer to the jelly combs.
Wait, because they have anuses?
Hold on to your seats. Humans and other great apes, for example, look and act alike, so it makes sense to assume they share relatively recent ancestors. People and dolphins look different and live very different lives, but they share some key traits, live birth, mammary glands, and hair. So they're more like second or third cousins. Taking this approach to the entire diversity of animals on Earth would suggest that sponges split off long ago. They don't have the muscles, nervous systems, organs, or even the traditional mouth-to-anus digestive tract common to all other members of the animal kingdom.
Their the animals... mouth-to-anus digestive tract.
Yeah, the MADT. Their animal traits are basic.
That goes in the t-shirt list.
Yeah, it does. They're made of multiple cells, produce sperm, lack cell walls, and need to eat for energy. But comb jellies, which have muscles, and guess what else they have?
Anuses?
Not just anuses, simple anuses. Comb jellies, I guess we have complex anuses. Anyway, comb jellies, which have muscles, simple anuses, and nerves, despite so many other differences from most animals.
What's a simple anus?
No. It's like no strings attached, just, you know, out one way, that's about it. Comb jellies, which have muscles, simple anuses, and nerves. S-A-N, that should be a t-shirt too. Simple anuses
and nerves? That's,
or just cut the nerves.
I like the mouth to anus, the digestive tract.
That's good too. That can be on the back of the t-shirt. That can be a hit song of the band Simple Anuses. That's good, right? That's our band anuses. Is Simple that's Anuses.
Like a, that sounds like an 80s tribute band. Right?
Yeah, that's what it is to the jelly comb. Comb jellies, I mean, sorry. Comb jellies, which have muscles, simple anuses, and nerves, despite so many other differences from most animal life on Earth, seem to have diverged more recently, belonging to the same non-sponge branch of animal life as human beings, sea lions, and tarantulas. Why okay. that? Why do we have to? I don't get why that. Why those people? I mean, those creatures. But basically, here's the big discovery, okay? This sort of analysis is useful but imperfect. Birds and bats both fly, but not due to any common ancestor. They evolve their wings independently, as Live Science previously reported. Manatees and whales are both water-dwelling mammals, but Live Science reported manatees are closer to elephants based on earlier genetic work that comb jellies split off from the rest of the animal kingdom before nervous system, less sponges did. Okay, now they're just showing off about all the other pictures that they, all the other stories that they broke. Anyway, but this big picture method is too imprecise to make fine distinctions between cousins as distant as sponges and comb jellies. So the most important sponge comb studies rely on a handful of genes that all organisms share. Here's the big, the reveal, okay? Even in those common genes, mutations creep in over time. The more mutations that separate two animals' common genes, the longer ago their evolutionary paths diverged. From this perspective, some scientists argued comb jellies and not sponges were the most distant cousins of other life, but that conclusion came from just a couple of genes that had diverged greatly in the comb jellies. If comb jellies were the most distant cousins, that would be important. It would suggest comb jellies split off before nerveless sponges and evolved their own nerves separately from other life. And if evolution invented the nervous system or anus twice... then maybe evolution really likes nervous
system. Wait, is that really in there?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If evolution invented the nervous system or anus twice, then maybe evolution really likes nervous systems or anuses for some reason. Don't shame them. Don't kink shame evolution. That would tell us something important about life itself. This new paper throws cold water on that idea. Instead
the oft-held idea of
evolution of... favoring anuses. Instead of comb jellies, our improved analyses point to sponges as our most mutual animal relatives, restoring the traditional simpler hypothesis of animal evolution. Basically, we got breaking anus news.
I have two questions about this story. First of all, the headline, do we think that the headline was written by the writer or are there two people?
Right, probably an editor.
That's one of that's an amazing headline. Your most distant cousin doesn't have an anus, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's a different person from the person who wrote that sentence with the two parentheses anuses in it?
Perianalthetical?
Is that
I guess. Yeah,
perianalthetical? Perianalthetical.
Yeah.
Perianalthes.
Parentheses. So perianalthes. I don't know. At the end of the day, basically, nerves, anuses, and other common features of non-sponge animal life likely only evolved once. That's it. You know, you and I were on both different sides of the great anal debate.
Does it feel to you like that story was just an excuse for that person to write the word anus as many times as
I think so.
They could?
Yeah, probably.
Right? Because he didn't even need to use anus in the story, did he?
You mean they could just use
I mean, there are other traits.
They seem to swap it into nerves. But anuses is
could have
real...
said mouth or... ears, or I don't know.
It's not as good of a headline. I certainly wouldn't have reported on it. I feel like, was it written in another language? There was something a little off about it, but maybe just the anuses threw me off. It's been known to happen.
The anuses threw me off.
Yeah, another t-shirt idea. Yeah,
that's another t-shirt. I like that.
They are our cousins, and we need to just accept them, anus or no anus. Anus or not.
Right.
Taint at the question.
Yeah. Like Joe Biden's arms wrapped around America, we welcome everybody. Anus or not,
you are our cousins. We are our cousins' keepers.
All right. Well, that's what. Anything else about that?
No, it just isn't that. That's and that's been.
Let's
our,
go back over it again.
Our, that's been our weekly edition of Isn't That Anal?
All right. Well, for Isn't That Terrible, I don't really have anything that's nearly as good as that. I'm just thinking about the genre. We all consume so much news now, and there's like so much that happens in the world that we just lose track of stuff. And then every now and then you'll like read a headline that says like a country's gone.
Yeah.
Or there was a classic example of that this week. So the headline here is all gone, quote, St. Vincent Prime Minister appeals for aid amid ongoing volcano eruption. And then the lead is with one third of his Eastern Caribbean nation transformed into, quote, a relative wasteland from the erupting La Soufrière volcano. the Prime Minister of St. Vincent and the Grenadines Tuesday appealed to the international community for help with his country's recovery. It's an extraordinary existential challenge that is facing us, Prime Minister Ralph Gonsalves said. The leader joined the United Nations in launching an urgent appeal for assistance to address the budding humanitarian crisis and multiple challenges created by the volcano's ongoing explosions. They are seeking nearly $29.2 million in assistance to cover the next 6 months and help start the recovery. Of the 20,000 people evacuated from the red zone after the volcano first unleashed ash on April 9th, I felt like they intentionally did two SH words together.
Wait, where was it? Ash and what's the other one?
Unleashed Ash.
Oh, yeah.
I've never, man, that's
another
that's,
album.
Yeah, Unleashed Ash. Three quarters are identified by the UN as in critical need of immediate assistance. The disaster has destroyed crops in the northern third of the island of St. Vincent, where La Soufriere is located, and is leading to a water shortage. Schools have been disrupted because the buildings are being used as shelters, and two of the island's five hospitals had to be evacuated. Think of us feeding on a daily basis three meals over 10,000 to 12,000 people. It's a Herculean task. Gonsalves said, this is the midnight hour of our need, and we are expecting the international community to come to our aid. I seem to remember a time when there was, when either, if there was a massive disaster that wiped out a third of a country, or there was a dramatic scene of a volcano exploding, that it would have been all over the news and we all would have heard about it.
Remember, yeah, like, you're right. That story should be erupting. Sorry. But yeah, no, it should be a huge story. You're right.
I mean, it's a small island, but still, even just the fact that it's got dramatic video and everything, like, yeah, you know, when they had St. Helens or Montserrat, like, it was all over the news for some. And I guess this, we're just not into volcanoes anymore. Is that a
I
thing?
I guess. I don't know. Yeah, I don't. I mean, maybe it's because things are like, all these glaciers are melting away. It kind of, maybe it puts in perspective. It shouldn't, but maybe it's hard to keep track of the things being destroyed.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And the Fukushima thing?
Yeah, Fukushima, yeah. And
Fukushima
and
thing.
Could it also be that just people have more access to video about
But it's
freaky explosions and things like that?
So it doesn't stand out as much?
Right. So they, you know, if you want to see something blowing up, or, you know, you can just go on YouTube and watch hours of it now.
Right.
Right. So
how many people just haven't ever heard of St. Vincent's?
Probably a lot. I'm just, you know.
It's a hospital in New York, which also went away.
There was a volcano there too?
No, it was just, there's people maybe have hardened about the loss of St. Vincent. Yeah.
Because the hospital closed. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
They have St. Vincent destruction fatigue.
So they just can't connect to the story.
Yeah. They can't let themselves get attached. They've been burned before. But honestly, so how big of a, it is weird. Like, this is really not front page news.
I feel like this happens all the time, though. We have natural disasters that are really significant, and we just don't get a whole lot of headlines out of it these days. I think some of it has to do with the fact that these stories, the isn't that terrible or isn't that weird factor that used to drive so much news, has kind of like receded, while the divisive political media, the stuff that makes everybody pissed off and they want to click a million times and argue with each other, I think that gets much more engagement. We should periodically check to make sure all the countries that were there last week are still
around. Yeah. All the islands. Yeah. By the way, I just want people to know that Matt chose this story instead of baby born with three penises.
Yeah. I was trying to kind of
avoid
wean us off the penises, but
wean us off the wiener.
The thing is that the pun factor is so high in the show. I'm trying to avoid stepping in it every time, but wean us off the wiener.
Yeah.
But what happened with was there a baby boy born with three penises?
Oh, yeah, in Iraq. A boy born with three penises, the first ever reported case of human triphalia, a condition in which three phalluses form during embryonic development. The child, first seen by doctors as a three-month-old, that's a really long time to take your three-penis child to a doctor.
Yeah.
What's up with penis
scheduling? I don't
want
to judge. I'm imagining that there's probably some other factor involved, like maybe access to a doctor.
Oh,
maybe.
Right. Not to the penis, but yeah, you're right. It's a happy ending. He underwent surgery to move two of the phalluses, which were small projections at the base of the penis and scrotum. The third phallus was in the usual location. So that's good, and he's doing well.
In order to balance out this segment, we're going to need something, an animal with three anuses.
I know.
I bet if we look on the internet, we'll find something that has three anuses.
This is very interesting, actually. Extra or supernumerary penises are a rare congenital condition occurring only once every 5 million to 6 million live births. The level of development of these extra phalluses differs in different individuals. In the case of the child in Iraq, the two additional penises contain the erectile tissue called corpus cavernosum, which becomes engorged with blood during arousal, as well as a tissue called corpus spongiosum. Matt, sponge.
Mm-hmm.
Spongiosum.
Wow.
Which helps support the urethra, the tube through which urine passes. But the extra penises, and this is a happy ending. I did not mean to say that. This is the good news. But the extra penises didn't have urethras. This made surgical removal of the extra organs, guess what? What's the adjective we're going to use?
Problematic?
Simple.
Simple. Oh, I see. Okay. Excellent.
Like a simple anus? Simple urethra-free two extra penises.
So I found something, Matt, if you can open that. The kappa is, there are aquatic reptilian humanoids who inhabit the rivers and streams found all over Japan. They are generally the size and shape of a human child with scaly skin ranging in earthy hues from deep green to bright red. They possess three anuses, allowing them to pass three times as much gas as a human.
That's efficient. Is the kappa real or is it like from a...
It's like a Japanese legend, I think.
Oh,
or it's an internet legend about a Japanese legend. This week.
Okay. The most important news of the day. And that, of course, is the latest in the Vanguard.
You just got to get it out of the way. Because I think this is now going to be a feature of the show, basically. We're just going to keep telescoping this shot.
Yeah, I know. We have to until there's like not enough physical space on the screen.
I mean, this is like experimental internet. Sort of broadcasting.
Avant-garde, yeah.
Yeah, it's avant-garde.
We're going to have to do the Brady Bunch thing. I mean, we put it out there, but we didn't actually do it, right? So actually...
We're going to have to actually do it.
Right, in person. I don't even know where they're based.
Yeah. No, we don't have to do it in person. We can get them to send us video, like boxes of them going like that and stuff.
Yeah.
And then we'll have somebody animate it. Or somebody could probably do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anyone wants to, any useful idiots people... out there, any useful idiots is useful idiots. If you want to do that, we'll send you some merch.
And we'll put it on and
oh yeah, we'll put it on. We'll credit you. You'll launch your and you can say like the Vanguard. You can say you've been on the show.
Yeah, and then we'll definitely give emphasis to the edit that's the most insulting to all of us. So
I think you should
go back through time and find the most unflattering pictures.
Yeah.
Like the ones where there's glare off my bald head and stuff like that. I would go for that if I were you. So, okay, let's go to the videotape. Fuck it. We'll do it live.
Yeah.
Once again, myself and Zach, we were, I don't want to say we were featured because I said that last time and then they made fun of me, but a clip of our show was featured on Useful Idiots, co-hosted by Matt Taibbi and Katie Helper. Again, we did a video, one of the only channels that I'm aware of that did a video about how Useful Idiots was canceled by Rolling Stone.
We found out that we had a horseshit take, apparently. They kind of clued us in on the last video that we're about to watch. We assumed that it was because of Syria and Assad and all that kind of shit, and their coverage of what was going on. It looks like it's actually because of Saudi Arabia and Yemen, or at least that's what's implied.
Right. Exactly.
A lot of people were like, wow, this is terrible journalism and laser journalism. It was like, we were just literally speculating. This was a literal fucking clip. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, just want to say a huge shout out to Matt Taibbi and Katie Helper. We mentioned it last time, but Zach and I are big fans of obviously Taibbi's journalism going back for a while, but also just of Katie Helper on YouTube and of Useful Idiots, the program. They're two of the best voices on the left and two people we really respect. So obviously it's just been a treat and a little bit surreal to see our danky little show featured on their platform again.
Which is why we're going to ride this segment until the wheels come off, until they stop responding to the Vanguard.
Exactly.
Anyway, go ahead and play the clip.
Exactly. Yeah, and this is pretty cool too.
They did a good job of it, you'll see.
In my media career. Which is that I want Zach and Gavin from the Vanguard podcast. I want them to become the biggest thing on the internet.
Well, not.
Do you hear that, guys? Just saying.
The biggest thing on the internet.
Absolutely, even bigger. Like,
no.
Even bigger.
No.
Even bigger, Katie.
Bigger. They can be our sidekick of a show.
Okay, so it can be Useful Idiots and Friend. We're friends.
Friends.
I'm the friend.
Let's check in with this.
Hey, Katie, come on. We never had Rolling Stone propping this up.
They did this week because they did a thing on why we were fired from Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
And then we did a thing watching them.
Right.
Watching us. And then they did a thing watching us. So now we can do a thing.
I think we actually have to look this way if we're going to do that thing. So, no, you need to turn the other way. Yeah, then we both need to look this way when we're watching this clip so that it works out well. So, anyway. Yeah.
Well, anyway, we should watch the clip, right?
Yeah.
We were on Useful Idiots, bro.
Bro, that was fucking crazy. Insane. So, for anybody who doesn't know, me and Gavin, both of us, have been big fucking fans of Useful Idiots, Matt Taibbi's books.
I'm actually getting confused at this point.
Yeah, look how well they edit it. Look, it looks like we're listening to it. You see? Wow. Yeah, looks like we're responding to it.
One of our clips reacting to Rolling Stone getting canceled, and they actually reacted to it, and it didn't seem like they hated it.
Really well edited.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it looks like we're responding to it.
Us reacting to them. It was pretty wild, pretty trippy stuff. And what I'm about to do here is going to make it even trippier because now it's us looking at them. Looking
Gavin,
at us,
now you got to turn profile like this. So this there you go.
But this was crazy, guys.
You guys look up again.
Last night when this episode dropped, and I forget who it was, but shout out to whoever hit me up on Twitter. Funniest voices in this, you know, leftist media space.
A great host. One of those
they're talking about me there.
Conversations. I love her live streams because it is just kind of like, oh.
Brush your teeth in less than
they got ads. Oh, I want one of those. Hey, if you want to sponsor us.
What is that thing?
It's a
10 seconds with this revolutionary
toothbrush. It looks like a something you
looks
bite
like
down
a
on.
Torture device.
Yeah, it does, right?
So basically we got the shot, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so and also I think Matt, we need to have they have a Hate Inc. book club. So we need to have a Hate Inc. book club video club where we analyze their analysis of Hate Inc.
Oh, that's actually
right.
Stupid, but I like it. Yeah. No. That could really be irritating. I like it.
Yeah,
I got it behind me.
Is it behind me? Yeah, your book is next to the pig ass.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Where it belongs.
Where it belongs. Yeah. But we should do that. So then we're analyzing them, and that could get really embarrassing for me really quickly. But yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Why not?
Let's do it. What we really should do is find some early writing of yours that does actually embarrass you.
Oh yeah, that won't be hard. I have a
bunch of stuff from when I was like at feministing that I could read.
Oh yeah.
Like just annoying, like kind of like liberal feminist stuff, as opposed to like my leftist feminist stuff, where I make fun of the liberal feminist stuff.
That should be interesting. I'll dig some of that up.
I mean more pretentious
stuff.
Way too many
adjectives.
I want some pretentious, early journal. Like,
you could find that up till last week. I mean,
right? Yeah, true. Yeah, you know V.S. Naipaul, he died. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that's the way I refer to him. You know that
dead
guy?
He's not the only one.
Yeah. But he had a really good...
Not common to V.S. Naipaul.
Yeah. He has some really good rules about writing for early people. Not for you, obviously. But you just said you use too many adjectives, which is like, don't use adjectives when you're starting out.
When you're starting out. That's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but as Mark Twain put it this way, eschew surplusage.
Oh yeah, that's good. Yeah,
that was his. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Also
he's
dead.
His right word, not you know a second about, cousin.
Do you know about him?
Mark Twain
also
is also dead.
Another guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really quickly, the 7 rules for beginner writers. You ready for them? By Dead Man Naipaul. Do not write long sentences. A sentence should not have more than 10 or 12 words. Ooh, we should look at your stuff and see how it racks up. Each sentence should make a clear statement. It should add to the sentence that went before. A good paragraph is a series of clear link statements. Do not use big words. If your computer tells you that your average word is more than 5 letters long, there's something wrong. The use of small words compels you to think about what you are writing. Even difficult ideas can be broken down into small words. Never use words whose meaning you are not sure of. If you break this rule, you should look for other work. The beginner should avoid using adjectives except those of color, size, and number. Use as few adverbs as possible. Avoid the abstract. Always go for the concrete. Every day for 6 months at least, practice writing in this way. Small words, short, clear, concrete sentences. It may be awkward, but it's training you in the use of language. It may even be getting rid of the bad language habits you picked up at the university. You may go beyond these rules after you've thoroughly understood.
Is V.S. Naipaul talking about a computer?
And mastered them. I know. I mean, he did coincide with them.
I don't actually like a lot of those rules.
Really?
Yeah. Because this is like the sort of Ernest Hemingway school of writing, right. Short declarative sentences, no adjectives, no adverbs. It's like, you know, it's rules for people who don't really like writing, I think.
Well, yeah, it is for the beginner, again.
Right,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think Mark Twain's list at the beginning of Fenimore Cooper's Literary Offenses is better.
Oh, I don't know that. We'll have to do that on our next show. Tune back in. Yeah.
I mean, you can, if you applied those rules to everybody, then you would have a significantly less annoying internet probably. But yes. You also wouldn't have any good novelists probably.
Right. But can analyze the poem I wrote when I was 8 about homelessness.
Right. How did it go again?
I don't remember all of it, but one of the lines was, it was a first person poem about a homeless woman in Riverside Park, which is right near where I grew up. She was like, I ride the trains, see the fancy people in furs of coats and leather. Do they even notice me? I really wonder whether. It's pretty good for an 8-year-old.
Wow. It's kind of like, yeah, it's like Dr. Seuss meets like Jack London.
Upton Sinclair.
Sort
of. Oh, yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
The political stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to. We should do a deep dive.
Yeah.
Into that.
Yeah.
Like an hour long.
Every week.
Okay. So every week.
For
yes.
6 months.
Yes. I mean, getting back to the Vanguard, like I think that's the same idea as what we're doing here, which is let's take a joke and just keep beating
right.
on it until
yeah.
there's nothing left.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't watch Pot Save America. Don't listen to it. And
wait,
subscribe.
Rain review us. Subscribe.
All that stuff.
Substack.usefulidiots.substack.com. Usefulidiots.substack.com.
Right. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah. I like that jazz
kind of
type of departure.
Yeah. That's right. It's like Up With People. Right?
What's that?
God, I'm so old.
No,
never mind.
What is it?
Up With People was like the super corny dance show review, it's sort of like a High School Musical, but like 50 times stupider and more.